We're backstage once again with John Lennon, Ringo Starr.
Ringo. Backstage about 6 hours now. You know.
And Derek Taylor's with us here.
Oh, he's doing great.
Can I say a few words?
Yes, say something.
It's been very, very, very gratifying to see that the people in America are so warm and generous without seeking anything in return. All these presents and flowers that come in and nobody wants anything in return except possibly an autograph or two. And I think the Beatles would agree with that, but not always have they met this sort of generosity. But America's been great.
Thank you, Derek. I'm sure everybody will be happy to hear that, especially all the fans who do send in things. Ringo, you
look at most of the presents, you know, we get round to them sometime or other, and we open them all, and we're very grateful, and people must have been in the magazine or something, said, you know, the magazine said I like science fiction books, and I'm reading myself to death.
You've been asked a lot of questions at a lot of press conferences.
Yeah.
What was the worst question you ever asked?
The worst, I think when someone said to me, John, are you going to write another book? It's not that it's bad. I don't know, I suppose. I think personally that most people in the country, and especially press people, if they're sent on a job, they should at least learn our names, you know.
Well, that's a rule for every newsman, should know that.
Yeah, but, you know, and to ask questions like that. And even now, you know, after the, how long we've been here, 2 weeks, you know, we've been on telly in most states and everything, and they still mix us up, you know, which I can't understand at all. There's Neil Aspinall, our road manager's talking to me.
I just took a ride with Neil, and it was very unsuccessful.
Where did you go?
We went to look for some pictures.
Yeah? He's got hundreds of them. Where are the pictures? Oh, the... Did you find the...
John, what about the worst question you ever asked at a press conference?
That somebody asked me?
Yes.
Oh, hold on a second. I think of one.
One of the worst questions you get asked is... it hadn't happened so much this time, but the first time we got here, people kept saying, John, do people make fun of you because you're blind or you're nearly blind? Which is a lot of rubbish, you know. I'm just short-sighted, so I wear glasses, but I wear them dark, you see. But the thing is, when any of us refer to short-sightedness, we call it blind. Anybody who wears glasses to us is blind. By the time we got over to the States, it was all around that I was going blind, so people kept saying, what's it like, you know? What do the others say? It was awful, you know, a horrible question. Didn't like it at all, Larry.
The thing is, we were only funning, you know. We sort of shout at each other, you know. I mean, we all... Messing about, we argue like mad, we shout at each other, you know, and sort of telling each other off. But it's only in fun, and we'll say, oh, go away, you blind thing, you know, and they'll say, you know, they'll call me, you know, Snozzle or Big Nose or something. And, you know, we've got names for each other. And then it gets interpreted all different, you know. It gets, once in black and white, it looks so much worse than the way we say, you know, the fun bit of it doesn't come out.
Let's get into another maybe controversial question. When you look at, let's say, young ladies today, everybody says they're trying to get too old too fast. You understand what I mean?
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
I think from girls from, say, 13 to 15, want to look 18 to 20, and then once past that, they're trying to look 13 again, you know. But I think it's silly for a girl to try and look older than what she is, and for an older girl, it's, you know, it's much better if she tries to make herself attractive than look younger, you know.
What we're talking about, John.
Yes. I met a man who went to Glasgow with a bad egg. And, you know, nobody had sit with him on the train.
Oh, he's so deep, this lad.
That's not deep, Ringo.
He's so shallow, this lad.
Thank you. Just thought I'd tell you, man with a bad egg.
He likes to tell people things, does John.
What were we just talking about, John? You're married, and maybe someday you'll have a young lady for a daughter. We're talking about whether girls try to get too old too fast, if you know what I mean. What do you think about this?
Well, in America, definitely, not girls, just, you know, the ones I've met are probably less than the others. But people in general, kids in general in America are brought up to be it. You know, 10-year-olds look about 16. That's exaggerating, say 14. 14-year-olds look about 18. You know, and that's sort of, you know, they sort of bring them up too fast, even though they're not, educationally, they haven't had half the education that most Europeans have had, but they look older, and they act older.
I was speaking with Chris Hutchins the other day, and we had a little argument about Americans and Britons, and their feelings about analyzing things. I asked him, for example, Chris, what do you think, how could you analyze the Beatles' success? And he said, well, Americans try to analyze things too much, and they try to categorize them. Do you ever do this, or just natural thoughts come out of you?
Thing is, you know, sort of English people or the people I met around Europe do analyze things, but they don't say it the same way. An American can go into some sort of deep kind of, what do you think is basically, psychologically, the whole business of this Beatlemania, whereas somebody in England will just come up and say, how did you make it? You know, the same thing goes on everywhere we've been, but they'll just say it different. Americans take 10 minutes to ask you what do we think of Beatlemania or how it happened. An English fellow will take about 4 minutes.
Well, another thing, Ringo especially. You read fan magazines, and you see, I'm not a disc jockey. I don't know if you're aware of this. I'm news director at the station.
No, we're not aware of this.
Get out of the room!
And not DJs, they play the records.
Well, he didn't write about it.
And I'm a newsman, and you look at the world today and see this so-called Cold War and everything else. What are your thoughts about a war and possible military service, if it ever came?
I hate the thought, you know, of war anyway. And I always think to myself, well, if there, you know, ever is another war, but the, you know, you can't, I don't know, this, the next war, I always imagine that they'll be throwing them dirty bombs at each other, you know, the atom bombs, and, you know, so if you win, you know, there's no one can win anyway. Even if you've got a bit of ground left, you've got all that, you know, contamination in the air and everything.
You think your music takes away, maybe makes people a little more lighthearted and takes away from all this Cold War fear? Because it's in most people, you know, the fact that, well, it can happen any day, you know.
I'm sure the Americans are more conscious of the next war than the Britons are, probably because they've got more power or something, or they've got more fallout shelters. But the next, you know, I can't visualize the next war. That's me, John talking. I'm just agreeing.
I'm just agreeing.
The thing is, you just hear about the last war and you think, yeah, okay, they went around battering hell out of each other with a couple of bricks and bombs, but nothing, you know, it happened, but everybody was left. So many things were left, Stanley, but the next war is sort of the end. I can't really visualize anybody going that potty and doing anything, you know.
I can't, no.
Only another like Hitler
would press a button, you know, and the first one, you know, I just think it's stupid war anyway, but to think that anyone would sort of even say, why didn't, you know, we say Russia and America sort of against each other, I suppose they are, but, you know, they're quite friendly nowadays, aren't they? But if anyone ever thinks of a war, well, I do personally, I always think, well, it'll be Russia and, or, you know, the communists against the Americans. That's the way I always feel the next war will be.
Yeah, that's right. You don't even feel as though it's communists against English, do you? You feel as though it's communists against Americans. We're just turning into a holiday resort, you see.
No, sure,
keep talking.
Okay, fine.
We got another five.
Okay, fine.
Well, 9 o'clock, give me a shout. It takes me 7 minutes to get ready. I'll time myself.
Me too.
You ever have any, this is another controversial question, is any internal problems within the Beatles, let's say, the four guys? You're bound to have differences. But any serious internal problems ever upset you?
We get plenty
of... It's a tough question to ask.
It isn't tough because, you know, we can answer it because we have plenty of arguments. But we're also sort of attuned to each other, and we know each other so well through the years that an argument never reaches a climax, or it never reaches the point where somebody goes up and says, I'm talking, you know.
In other words, it's forgotten.
It's not forgotten, but we know each other so well. It's like sort of mind reading. If an argument's building up between Ringo and I, say, there comes to a point where we know what's going to come next, and it's all, everybody packs in, or something, okay, he wins. You know, so we have ordinary arguments like other people, but we don't, there's no sort of conflict. All the people who have conflict in show business either get married about 19 times, they leave the group they're in and go solo. You know,
so
nothing ever happens.
In the group, you know, don't they? So I think that's why they leave, you know. In America, you get sort of, there's a group and there's always one singer, and then he sort of gets sort of big-headed and leaves, but I personally would hate to leave the other three, you know, if if it did happen, say I left and went on stage, I just wouldn't know what to do. You know, on my own, I'd be looking around. And the thing about that, when I was in hospital and the boys went to Sweden and then to Australia, I followed them out to Australia. And there was sort of people, you know, at the airports, not like I used to get off the plane, but I was on my own. And I don't know, just automatically looked around for the other boys, you know. You just, I don't know, I couldn't stand it on my own.
One gets reliant, Ringo, that's the thing.
Pardon?
One gets reliant on the other.
Yes.
You're about to go on stage, and there is one thing I want to ask, because I'd like to get this in. We're out in Hollywood. We're out in Hollywood, and you stayed out in a house out there, and you met so-called, some of them, Hollywood starlets and actors and producers and directors. Now, to me, this is the first time I've ever been around a crowd of a lot of movie stars, let's say. And to me, there was a basic difference between you, and I'm not trying to analyze, and them. You were natural, and they were not. Especially some of these young actors and actresses who claim to be stars, you know. What do you think about, do you think this world out in Hollywood is phony?
No more funny than most of the sort of acting or film world is. All the actors and film actresses that are genuine, people know they're genuine. You know, they come across, they're the ones that are natural on screen. Everybody knows, you know. But there's so many of them that aren't natural, and that's just the way of it. You know, we get used to meeting them. We know they're not natural. We know that maybe they're trying to be natural. But they just don't work, you know. They're just sort of phonies.
Yeah.
I didn't meet too many sort of stars of that in Hollywood, but I think the nicest fellow I did meet was Burt Lancaster, you know. He's a great, and he's so genuine, you know, and he's with his family and his wife, and we went round to see a movie.
I think it's even something like he's saying now, like Burt Lancaster's genuine. Sounds like a sort of show business, sort of actors or film stars cliche, but it isn't. Mm. Because the people we meet and we don't think are genuine, we either don't meet or we don't mention on tape or interview, or we tell them that we're lousy.
Yeah, but we can't sort of on tape mention all them phonies we've met, you know, which none of us like, you know, so we only, the trouble with us, we only...
There's one great, well-known film actress we met, wasn't it?
Yes, yes. She went to the club too, folks. You've read about it. I don't know.
No, they were read about the wrong one, but there was one of them who didn't seem to get a mention, although she tried so hard, you see.
Which caused all the trouble, actually, because she was flashing around and wanting photos and that, you know, for publicity and that, which is silly.
But somehow it didn't work. Due to George's astute business
brain of the photographer.
He stood up with a mighty blow and swept him from the room.
Which any normal fellow would do, you know, but just because George did it and he's in the Beatles, he gets all this publicity. But if you go to a club and there's this little photographer with a big camera and no one sort of says, well, can I take one, or, you know, is it all right, or they just sort of run up and put the flash about 4 inches from your eyes and then flash this dirty big light and it blinds you, which annoys you, you know.
Especially when you want to get away and enjoy yourself for a couple hours.
It's not so much that. Anywhere we go, we're going to get people coming up with their flashes 4 inches from you. You take it once, twice, maybe three times, and then you say, okay, whatever your name is,
you know,
have you done it? You've got enough pictures. You know, we're not going to do anything else. We're just sitting here. You've got all the pictures you need. And you go away, which is what happened in that club in Hollywood. So go away. And he said, okay. So he goes, but he comes back again. So, you know, it's embarrassing for us to ask people to go away because they say, oh, they're big-headed. You know, how dare they ask somebody to go away? So the manager of the club comes up and says, is he bothering you? We say, yeah, well, you just move him, tell him to drop his camera, come over and join the table, anything, but just stop flashing.
Yeah. Both of you, thank you very much.
Thank you for keeping us occupied all this time.
Thank you, Ringo.
You know, it's nice to talk when you're just sitting around. We'd only be sitting doing nothing. So thanks a lot. And give our regards to all the people in Miami.